walk to a movie if I want to.
That's great. I can too. It's in my basement.
All right, you son of a bitch. This conversation is over. This is We Have Concerns. Hi, Jeff Cannata.
Hi, Anthony Carboni.
Hello, concerned citizens.
Hey, Anthony.
Yes, Jeff.
You know that I love the VR. You know it.
Oh, we both love the VR. Yeah.
We both love the VR. I believe in VR. You know, it's waned a bit. I really thought that Half-Life Alyx was going to be the shot in the arm VR needed. It turns out it was a mere blip. But I have confidence that we're going to get there in my lifetime. And relatively soon, we're going to get there. Apple's going to come out with something. It's going to get there in the next 10 years.
Yeah, I think the biggest, we've talked about this before. I think the Oculus Quest 2 was the biggest leap towards what I want.
Yeah.
It's light. It's easy to use. It's
self-contained.
It's self-contained. It's starting to use your hands and your fingies. It's not entirely there yet, but hands and fingies are a big deal.
Well, this is it's what I want to talk about. I want to talk about hands and fingies.
Okay, let's talk about them.
Because one of the big impediments, we've got wonderful surround sound placement, 3D audio that places audio around you. You feel like something's behind you. Ooh, there it is in VR. We got the visuals that are nearly there. Yes, it would be great to have wider field of view. Yes, that would be great. And we're working on that. Yes, it would be great to have faster processors. We can do higher res stuff that looks a little bit closer to what we get on a 2D surface. We're getting there. Mm-hmm. But one of the senses that is really important for that sense of presence and being there and interacting with objects in a virtual world.
Fingies.
So I want to talk about this article that was sent to us, posted on our Discord, which is available exclusively for patrons. This was posted by Nacho Supreme. Thank you, Nacho Supreme. I enjoy
Nacho
you.
Nacho Supreme.
Frequently. Probably too frequently. Ooh, whoops. I love a Nacho Supreme.
I can't recall the last time I had a Nacho Supreme. I think I was but a wee lad.
Love me a Nacho Supreme. You know, Taco Bell has removed my favorite item, the item that would get me to go there, which is the Mexican pizza.
But
the Nacho Supreme is a good second option. Anyway,
we've discussed this a little bit before, but I fell off of Taco Bell when Taco Bell got real gross. And apparently Taco Bell's not gross anymore. I don't know.
Oh, People love Taco Bell now. It's still gross.
It's not so gross that people are avoiding it anymore. It feels like Taco Bell is a big deal now.
I think says more about the people than it does about the Taco Bell. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Maybe.
People have just lowered their standards. Anyway,
The Mexican pizza.
I'm very, very. I'm not hiding that. Very mad. This is an article from sciencenews.org all about haptic feedback and the current state of the art in haptic feedback, which I find fascinating. I do, as much as I love VR, you know, when I got my lightsaber battling with Vader, it's great that I get a little vibration when my lightsabers cross.
But it doesn't stop.
It doesn't stop. It's not really that feeling. When I reach out with my controller and I touch something in the world, it's always going to feel like a vibration. That's all we can do right now.
Right.
That's all we've got. It doesn't actually feel like the thing.
And then when you're not using the controller and you're just using fingies and fingy positioning, you get no feedback. You go to open a doorknob or pick up an object and it's just nothing.
Right. So this article goes into what is being worked on right now and where we are. And it starts with a very interesting series of experiments that have been done in the UK about how we actually experience touch and what those sensors in our skin, those receptors in our skin, they're called Pacinian corpuscles that sit deep inside the skin, relatively deep inside the skin.
Pacinian corpuscle is the name of a lawyer in a Charles Dickens book.
Oh, Pisidian corpuscle here. I will take that child, and I will put them back in the mines.
But the child doesn't want to go to the mines.
Oh, but this document here that I got from the Lord Chamberlain informs me that this child is my property, and I shall take him back to the mines.
Is it true? Must I go back to the mines, Lord Havisham? Unfortunately, well, yes. It is true, Timmy. I'm looking at the document right now. And it's notarized.
I'll get you, corpuscle. I'll get you for all the children.
That's a pretty good book.
Pisidian corpuscle. Pisidian corpuscle is deep under the skin, beneath the epidermal layer of the skin, in the dermis. And that is actually, you know, anytime you feel the sense of touch, if you touch anything, you know, imagine touching something bumpy or soft or anything. Mm-hmm. If you really think about it, what's happening is your skin is getting, is being moved, is being depressed, is being displaced, right? And so there are things that can touch your skin. Bugs, all kinds of stuff can touch your skin and you don't feel it, right? Just because it makes contact with your skin doesn't mean you actually have the sensation of touch. What has to happen is that the Pisidian corpuscle deep in your skin has to be displaced, has to pick up that sensation, because your skin has to feel enough pressure to reach that deep in your skin. And when you're actually feeling is something called a Rayleigh wave. Now, a Rayleigh wave is basically any kind of wave that affects the surface of something. A Rayleigh wave is the thing we feel when we experience an earthquake.
I can do a backside 180 Rayleigh wave, but only in Tony Hawk 3.
Tony Hawk 3?
Yeah. That's the only one I can do it in. I know, but that's the only one I can do the trick in. I wish I could do it in 2, because then I could do it with Spider-Man.
Oh, yeah, that would be cool. When you see Spider-Man do a Rayleigh wave.
So good. It's with Spider-Man, it's a Rayleigh wave. It's a Ben Rayleigh wave.
Well done. Well done. Well done.
I hate myself.
No, a Rayleigh wave is the same thing we feel when an earthquake happens, because it's the waves that happen on the surface of the earth. But these are the same kind of waves that happen anytime you feel pressure on your skin. You're actually feeling a wave of energy move through your skin. And if it is deep enough for the Pisidian receptors to pick it up, then your brain interprets that as touch, as texture, as sensation.
So we are pressure sensitive, but there's a certain threshold below which we don't feel anything. Yes. But as that moves up, these waves cause us to actually feel things in our skin because of these receptors.
Exactly. And this experiment that happened that they did in the UK has come up with a mathematical formula that tells you the relationship between the intensity, the length of the Rayleigh wave, and how deep the Pisidian receptor can be in the skin to feel it. Now, the reason you would have, they call this the universal scaling law. And the reason that this is important is because different mammals have a different depth of their Pisidian receptors.
Okay.
So the larger the animal, like a whale or a rhinoceros or an elephant, the deeper under the skin this receptor sits.
Are we making VR for whales?
Fuck yeah, dude. Come on. Why wouldn't
Holy
you?
Shit. All right, Jeff, here's my idea. Here's my idea for hydroelectric power.
Beat Saber for whales.
Yeah, basically, you take a whale, you put it in a whale-sized tank.
Yeah,
okay?
I'm with
like
you.
A whale, yes. Like a whale-sized infinity pool or whatever. hook it up to whale VR. And make it think that it's swimming. Well, like, I don't know. Like maybe it's going after a whale in a bow and a dress. You know, it's got to swim after it.
Yeah. I like
you know,
this.
Like classic,
this is
like classic
Pepe
whale
Le Pew plan.
Yeah, exactly. And then when the whale's swimming, You know, it's moving the water, which is turning the turbines. And then we've got free whale power plus docile whales that you can visit anytime you want.
I feel like you'd have to switch out the whales pretty frequently in this plan. I mean, are you just going to drive these things until they die? Or what are you doing?
Well, you have more than one whale, Jeff. You have a whole bank of whales.
Imagine if you will,
the Matrix, but instead of using people for batteries, the idiot robots used something cool like whales.
No, I like this, but I hasten to remind you that those were the bad guys in that movie.
Yeah, because they were using people who are supposed to be the good guys. Jeff, right. You're forgetting that people are the good guys.
Nobody likes whales.
Yeah, no matter what we do, people are the good guys. That's what you're forgetting. Right. Yeah, everything else that gets in our way is bad guys. Okay?
Gotcha.
So, and here's the other thing. Whale love it. Whales swim anyway.
That's true. And they definitely love little female whales with bows on their heads.
I don't know if they're lady whales. I just know they have bows and dresses.
I see.
I don't know.
Well,
everybody likes a partner who's put together. That's all I'm saying.
it's more a style issue than anything
else. Yeah, it's more like they took the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're trying to catch up to them to pay them a compliment for how well they're put together.
Open a door for them. You know?
Yeah. So the fascinating thing about this is that this ratio is constant no matter the mammal, with the notable exception of rodents. So they actually did experiments on humans, the human forearm, dogs, dolphins, giraffe, elephant, rhinoceros, whales. And they found that it is a 5-to-2 ratio between the length of the Rayleigh wave resulting from touch and the depth of the receptor. It's constant. So even though a whale and a rhinoceros have a much deeper receptor, as long as you press the equivalent hardness to maintain that ratio of 5-to-2 or harder, they'll feel it. It's the same, no matter what.
Like the amount of time it takes animals to urinate. All animals take about the same amount of time to urinate.
I don't know what studies you're into, dude, but this is the one I'm talking about.
Yeah. I'm just saying there's so many things that are consistent between.
Right, but you're talking about your pee study. You're always bringing up your pee study all the time. I think it's
a fascinating thing. I don't think a lot of people know about it.
All right. Fair enough, but I'm talking about...
It's peer-reviewed.
Peer-reviewed.
A lot of people watch those animals pee. And timed it.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
Anyway, I think this is really, really interesting. Now, like I said, the notable exception here is rodents. Rodents are just completely off the scale. There's this, like, direct 5-to-2 ratio, and then rodents are, like, over here on the graph just... completely unrelated to the rest of mammals.
Are they, does it take more or less pressure for a rodent to feel?
Less. And some, they think that's because their appendages are so much tinier than any of the other mammals that they studied, that it just doesn't scale.
That's gotta
the
be
same way.
Super helpful for them too. Cause you think about trying to sneak up on a mouse. Like if you've got a mouse in your house, trying to sneak up on a mouse, I swear they can feel the vibration. From like a
feel
million
it, feel feet. It.
They can feel it.
Feel the vibration. Come on. Feel it. Feel it.
I think they can. And I think because they feel
they're
like
little
just
marky
like,
marks, all of them.
They go running away. That's fascinating. You know what's funny? I mean, this is the amount it takes to just feel a sensation. It doesn't say what that sensation is. Like I would imagine different animals have different pain thresholds and things like that as well. Because we've heard that like, so it may take the same amount of pressure, this 5-to-2 ratio for a dog to feel a pat as it does for a human to feel a pat, but you can pat a dog with like much more force before their pain receptors pick up on it.
Yeah, no, again, this is not a study about how to hurt animals, man, or how long they pee.
It's just a study on how to stop before you hurt animals, Jeff.
it's just when the receptor even activates at all. So, I mean, they may have different pain thresholds as well, but this is just like, when do you register the feeling. Now, it doesn't go into the methodology. I don't know how you like ask the dolphin whether they felt you or not, but somehow they seem to
you
have.
You do the upwards nod and you go, you feel me? Feel me, dog?
Feel me? You feel me? Yeah. It's and then they reply, it's such a good vibration. Yeah.
Come on.
So this is leading researchers to believe that at some point we may be able to get ultrasonic waves to create artificial touch in haptics. So if it really is just a Rayleigh wave, you could theoretically, I mean, we don't have the tech yet, but you could theoretically just use a wave, an ultrasonic wave, to at this ratio to create that sensation in your finger, your arm, your whatever. So that's really cool. And they talk about how some of the applications of this could work. There's a lot of research into trying to add a tactile element to online shopping, for example. So if you can put a wave through like a touchscreen on your phone, then you can like rub the fabric of something, you know, feel the fabric, feel it.
No,
come on. You don't want to feel the fabric?
I don't want anything connected to shopping. Connected to online shopping.
This is how it's going to happen, dude. Who else is going to fund this research other than Amazon?
I don't know. But like, tell me about how it's cool for Ver. I mean, I've tried some things that are cool for Ver. I've worn like a haptic vest and things like that.
Me too. Or like, it weird, where it just like electrocutes you when you get shot in a video game. I had that. Did you try that one?
I did. And that's stupid. I don't like the whole point of being in video game is that you can like, if I get shot, I'm cool. I'm fine.
Yeah.
That's the point of video game.
Yeah.
The coolest one I played was I played Rez with the haptic suit, but that has like nothing to do with actual touch. That's just like different musical instruments thumping your body at different times. And like you said, it all kind of just feels like you got thumped.
Right.
It doesn't really feel like a thing, but can we create create tactile fabrics or tactile suits or something?
That's what they're talking about. They're talking about doing these waves at a nanometer scale. This is like billionths of a meter that can change how you perceive the texture of the glass of the touchscreen. So they could theoretically, right? We don't have this tech yet, but this is what they're working on. They're shifting the electric charge on the surface of the glass can change the attraction between the finger and the touchscreen. So it can actually it's called electroadhesion, which is the contact point between your finger and the touchscreen. And so you could theoretically create all sorts of different haptic inputs. So it could feel like, you know, soft fur, or it could feel like a bumpy, or it could, you know, anything you could imagine. That's what they're aiming for, is that you could literally translate that feeling through a touchscreen on a device.
I think it's going to be used for shopping and porn first.
Well, certainly porn first. I mean, I can only imagine that porn is lining up for this. But, you know, there's a lot of really interesting applications that this article goes over that aren't shopping or porn. One of which is something like a car touchscreen that gives you information based on the tactile feedback that you get. So you don't have to look at it. So like if you're in one menu item, it feels a certain way, and you're in a different menu item, it's, you know, soft or fuzzy, and one is hard and scratchy or whatever. So that, you know, as you're moving through this menu, you don't even have to read things. You can just feel it.
That's huge. Cause cool. I feel like as cars move to just having like touch screens in the middle and touch screens for everything, I'm definitely looking down at the touchscreen much more than I ever, you know what I mean?
Oh,
than
totally.
I ever looked. Whereas opposed to like, I understand like touchscreens and everything around the house, but like when I'm in the car, there's some like There's a reason a car is supposed to have different buttons and knobs and stuff. It's you can tell which button and knob you're pushing without looking away from traffic.
That's what I was going to say, is that cars have had haptic feedback for their entire lifetime until now. Right. You reach down to the volume knob of your radio. You don't have to look at it. You feel this big bulbous volume knob. Yeah. You know, there's no now it's this big flat glass screen that everybody's interacting with, trying to select their music. But before, I was putting a cassette tape in a big hole and rotating a giant knob, you know,
turning the crank to start the car.
Yeah.
You know,
in my childhood. You know, I was feeding the horse the hay myself. Right.
And then the horse is on a treadmill, which moves the car forward.
Exactly. And by the way, the horse, same ratio, 5-2.
5-2 on a horse.
Another application they talk about in this article is virtual doctor visits. So they imagine a situation where you have a sensor on your body and some of it, like a pad that you can put on your throat or whatever. And the doctor wants to feel your lymph nodes, and that pad translates the 3D, geography of your throat, you know, the deformation.
Wait,
of what
how does the pad do that?
I don't know, but that's what they're talking about. They're talking about
they have these flexible
patches.
That seems like an entirely separate technology.
Well, it's all in the same, you know, if you have, you got to input the data somehow, right? So maybe it picks up the, you know,
touching a pad placed in between my throat and the doctor's finger better than touching my throat? What does the pad know, and how does it know it?
They're talking about having robots or, you know, these pads, or like robot that like sticks, you know, sticks sensors on your throat, or like its little robot fingers on your throat. And then on the other side, the doctor is wearing gloves, haptic gloves, and it translates what the robot feels.
Do you know where these haptic pads would be super cool? In a hovercraft. What you'll do is you'll put these haptic pads in the hovercraft, and when you're controlling your anti-gravity hovercraft.
I see what you're doing. I see what you're doing. You're making up another fanciful technology and thinking that it just exists also to make a point about how
I use the synthetic haptics that they're talking about in this technology. They really helped me finish my time machine. It just feels like a fucking leap, my guy. Like, sure, if we also invent tiny robots that can like relay the feeling of a throat, yes. Then yes, I'm sure they could relay it to the pad. But I would give you a follow up then, Jeff, and I would say, if the tiny robots can already relay the information about the throat, why does the doctor need to touch my throat anymore? And why is there even a pad? Why wouldn't the tiny robots just put the information on a screen and be like, hey, here's what's going on in this guy's throat?
What? Why do they have to be tiny robots? Maybe it's a full-size robot.
So this is just, now we're talking about a fully autonomous robot doctor.
No, connected to a guy wearing haptic gloves. So a real guy. You don't just remove humans from this process. Come on. Don't
be crazy.
So
you're saying this is like distant surgery, but with feeling. Once more with feeling.
Yes.
So these are like when people are doing the surgeries and on the old commercials, or even kind of now, they talk about telesurgery where like a doctor is moving instruments.
Right.
And then 1,000 miles away, the instruments are also moving. That's what you're talking about. But,
yes.
But with a sense of touch.
It says,
I thought I'm in the room with this doctor.
Let me read you the quote. Quote, researchers.
No, I understand it now.
Are already working on materials that can translate digital information about touch into sensations people, and in this case, doctors, can feel.
Great.
The same materials could communicate information for virtual reality applications. One possibility is a skin patch.
The thing about this paragraph is it's not talking about distance. It's saying it can just communicate it to doctors, and I'm like, I'm already in the room with my doctor.
Well, it was making the point for during like COVID when we didn't want to go see doctors.
They just need to say distance. That's all they need to say. That's all they need to say. If I'm in the same room with a doctor, he doesn't need a pad. He's got God's pads, which is what we call fingies.
Yeah, but what if you had robot fingies? So much better.
Now, if I had a doctor with robot who got his hands removed and replaced with robot hands that had perfect human sensation of touch, but also perfect robotic movement, that's a good doctor.
Yeah, that's your cyberpunk doctor.
I love that.
And I'm glad you brought up this angle, because that's my next point that is in this article that I think is really interesting. So there's these other doctors that have been doing research. European researchers in 2019 added sensation for amputees, people that have lost limbs, hands, and arms. And they were adding some touch receptors to prosthetic limbs.
See, this is cool. I like this.
This is super cool. Okay, so get this. So they used this, they actually wired into nerve endings.
Yeah,
in
they did.
The end of their arm or their elbow.
They did.
The last point at which, you know, the amputation happened. Mm-hmm. And they attached, an electrode to stimulate certain nerve endings, or actually the bundles of fibers within the nerve. And it created sensations like the person had. This is a person who was amputated. So they had life with a hand, and now they had life without a hand. And they were actually getting the sensation of having people, when they touched the prosthetic hand, it would send an electric impulse to a bundle of nerves in their, you know, in the amputated part of the stump. And they would feel the sensation like they were actually being touched on their hand. But here's the crazy part.
That's dope. That's not the crazy part.
No, the crazy part is they knew which nerve ending to attach it to, but they weren't ever sure how that nerve translated that into the placement on the hand. So they had no way to map at which point to place the electric impulse. So the people would feel the touch on the prosthetic hand, feel a sensation of touching on a hand that they don't have, but in a different place.
Wow.
So you touch the top of your hand and they might feel it on the bottom of the hand. They feel like it was being touched. We just don't know what part, which exact nerve fiber to stimulate to get the right placement. And they found that even after they used this prosthesis for over a year, that mismatch didn't improve. Their brain never went, okay, well, that's the top of the hand now. It was always wrong.
Huh.
Isn't that crazy?
Fucking wild. I love this.
Yeah. It says doctors can choose which nerves an electrode will stimulate, but they don't know in advance which bundle of fibers it will affect within the nerve. So it's just like, well, hopefully it feels like the top of your hand. No, it doesn't. Ah, sorry, man.
Oh, well, we did what we could.
Yeah.
And it was it feels like something, and you didn't have that before. So
yeah, it's something. And they go, okay, well, let's wait a year and see if your brain just makes the connection. Cause now you're looking at your prosthetic hand and you're going, no, that's not the top. That's the bottom. No, it never changed. It always felt wrong. It always felt like you were touching me in the wrong place. Isn't that crazy?
Wow. Yeah. I mean, it's crazy, but it's also not crazy. It's also what I would expect. We're just splicing stuff onto things. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, let's see if this is correct. It feels like it would be correct. Not correct? Well, let's try another one. Still not correct? Fuck. Yeah. Well, now it turns out your brain only wants to do it this way. So we fucked you because we also don't know what your brain do.
Yeah. It doesn't give me a lot of confidence that we're going to figure out this whole haptic thing for Ver, you know?
I think it's easier for Ver because for Ver, you're sending it to a suit.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
For Ver, you're sending it to a suit. And so you just have the suit do whatever in the right place. Unless you're talking about the brain jacking.
Yeah, let's brain jack. Let's just
unless
do that.
You're talking about the brain jacking shunt, the shunt in the in yeah. the in the brain stem,
and
which is where we're all
touch.
Trying to get.
We don't have to worry about touch specifically because we're just going to create a whole matrix-like alternate world.
Yeah, that's easy than making it feel like somebody's hand is being tapped. We've got
so
this.
Much easier. So much
we've
easier.
We've got this. This is cool. When am I going to see this in Ver? Like next week? When can I buy this? When's
the
Kickstarter?
This is going to be announced. This is going to be announced at GDC next week.
It should. So, yeah.
I'm excited. The thing that was most encouraging as far as Ver goes, the Kaylee waves, right? Because it feels like that is something that an avenue of research that is immediately applicable to creating tech that'll make me feel like I'm touching fur or, you know, hard thing, soft thing, spongy thing. Yeah. It feels like they could figure that out. It's not going to happen soon, but they're working on it.
I love it. I can't wait. I can't wait for the medical applications. I can't wait for the frivolous applications. I can wait for the online shopping and commerce applications, but that's fine.
Yeah. But
that's
imagine
fine. I'll take it all at once.
I mean, I'm somebody that I'll admit it. I enjoy me some ASMR, you know, I find it soothing to be whispered to. I sometimes before bed, listen to some soothing whispers to calm me down. Imagine the burgeoning market of people being whispered to and also like stroking your arm or face or just talking nicely and touching you in some very
imagine
gentle.
The burgeoning market for just talking nicely.
Well, that's ASMR, baby.
No, I mean, just like in general, imagine just people talking nicely to one another.
I have a hard time imagining that. I live in America.
Same. Hey, Nacho Supreme, thank you for sending that into the Discord.
Yeah.
We really appreciate it. If you want to hang out in the Discord, it's not just for suggesting stories. No, that's ridiculous.
Oh, so much more.
There's so much more. It's also
making contact with like-minded folks.
Sharing pictures of your pets.
Oh my God, so many pet pics.
But also talking about science news, talking about games, talking about movies, books, technology. We've got everything. We've got a fitness challenge going on right now. The world is opening back up. And so we have all decided to get moving. We've decided to take the meat suits and get them back into shape. And we've been doing, a lot of us have been doing couch to 5K and just kind of cheering each other on. It's been very lovely. We all have staggered start times. So if you're looking for a supportive community to jump in and get moving again with, I highly recommend joining. You can find out how to join at patreon.com/wehaveconcerns. You can also find other ways to support the show and get other great bonuses like extra episodes, bonus audio, and bonus videos. That's patreon.com/wehaveconcerns. Speaking of which, Jeff, one or two?
Oh, I like this part. I'm feeling one today. Feeling one.
Feeling one today?
Yeah.
Jeff, I want to talk about romance.
Oh, finally. We're talking about those two scientists?
Well, in a manner of speaking, Jeff. In a manner of speaking, which, no, I'm not, but in a roundabout way. How do you think most romantic couples meet each other?
Well, usually it's some sort of wacky hijinks. There's perhaps a bookstore and some sort of somebody bumping into something and a book falling, and then both people leaning down at the same time to pick up said book, and their foreheads hitting together, not hard enough to cause any real damage, but just hard enough to make them stand up abruptly and stare into one another's eyes and realize in that moment they are looking at their future.
You're talking about that meet cute.
Yeah, that's how romances start. That's my understanding. Yeah. Is all romances start with a meet cute.
A lot of people think the romances start with a meet cute. A lot of people think that romance starts, the spark of romance happens between strangers and turns into a romantic relationship. No matter how you might meet that stranger, you and your wife met on you met on an app, right? You were doing a dating
Match.com.
thing.
Match.com. That's right.
You're doing Match.com. So, yeah. That's been like a huge thing. A lot of people are saying that they're meeting their partners these days or meeting a lot of the people that they're dating on apps or on sites. But here's the thing. A couple of researchers were looking into
each other's eyes.
I mean, not necessarily.
Yes, but I mean,
here's the thing, Jeff. There are three researchers responsible for this.
Love triangle.
I don't know that it is. I think there's just three researchers who are looking into this. I think they just worked together.
It gets awkward when it's three researchers and the table, and they look at each other over the table, and then one of them goes, "Wait, I thought it was you and me." And the third one goes, "Yes, but I just saw her, and now it's awkward. Oh, the research is so awkward now."
The research is so awkward now.
Maybe three of them can make it work as a throuple. You know.
I hope so. And I'm sure we can follow up with them about it. But I want to talk about their study, which they went into a study. They looked at studies of romantic couples and how relationships begin. And they found out that there is something skewed about the way we've been studying relationships. Something that perhaps comes from the very types of media that you are so so astutely referencing with your encyclopedic knowledge of
film.
You're
saying this is the John Hughes effect.
It's a bit of a John Hughes effect. It's a bit of a Nora Ephron effect.
Yeah.
It's a rom-com effect, right? Studies, 75% of all studies on the beginnings of relationships and how people find one another focus on the spark of romance between strangers. Now, there is a particular type of way that people meet and become a couple that was only studied by 8% of previous studies. Do you know what that type was, Jeff?
Meeting of coworkers?
No, Jeff.
Family members? That's weird.
That's like weird.
I
have a feeling more than 8% of studies are about weird shit like that. But
yeah, like a Jamie Lannister situation. Yeah.
That's a completely different field of study, I think. That's more geneticists. Yeah. These are more psychologists and social scientists. Only 8% centered on romance that develops among friends over time.
This might be even more the John Hughes effect. She was there the whole time.
Maybe she took her glasses off, or he took his glasses off.
It took this entire wacky adventure for me to realize.
Maybe they both let their extremely long hair down out of their tight ponytails.
All of the crazy hijinks over the last 2 weeks has made me realize you were right there the whole time.
They got into the car to drive cross country with you.
Yeah.
To save your relationship with the other girl.
Yeah.
And yet they were right there.
They were right there.
They were right there. And here's what they found. They were like, wait a minute. These numbers have to be skewed. These numbers have to be skewed. The problem with this is if these numbers are skewed, if the amount of study we're doing on strangers meeting and getting into romantic relationships is 75%, but that's only a minimum percentage of the actual people who are meeting and getting together, we're studying romantic relationships wrong.
Huh.
There are a ton of studies out there about how strangers become attracted to each other and start dating. That's what people want to know, right? That's what we're fascinated by.
Yeah. But
how do I get out there? What do people want in a stranger? How do you make a good first impression?
Right.
All
What's
of these
a pickup
things?
Line? How do you introduce yourself? How do you make
all these,
how do you stand
what
out?
What kind of scents does a stranger like? If I smell a certain
Common
way, look
sense.
A certain way, talk a certain way.
Yeah.
What do I do? How do I present myself as a
potential suitor.
Yeah. We don't even do alpha males anymore, Jeff. It's all about the sigma male now.
We're all the way down to sigma?
Hold on, it's all about the sigma male.
But we're all the way down to sigma?
No, sigma's second.
Sigma's second?
I mean, not historically and not in the Greek alphabet. but they've decided to insert themselves right after Alpha. But even though they might be a little better than Alpha, it's a new, don't look it up. It's just garbage. It's trash. But a lot of people are trying to figure out how to attract these strangers of the opposite sex. But it turns out that according to this study right here, that these three researchers who are in a perfectly professional relationship.
It started out as friends. And now they're just a throuple.
Nope. Just coworkers and colleagues.
Exactly. Friends that one day turned around and went, oh my God, she was standing there the right time, right next to him, who was also standing there. And all three of us have been standing here
the two of them dropped a book and hit their heads together. And I was watching it, and the way they did it looked so cute that I instantly fell for both of them. Look.
Yeah.
They wanted to collect data, 1900 participants.
That was in the, by the way, Anthony, that was in the famous Nora Ephron movie. You've got mail and you've also got mail.
Both of you seem to have mail. What a coincidence that all three of us should have mail. They sent out, they did this study with 1900 participants. 900 were students from the university where the study was conducted, but 1,000 of them were other adults who volunteered. 68% across all age groups reported that their current or most recent romantic relationship began as a friendship versus any other type of meeting, like at a party or online. The meet cute. The meet cute didn't happen for almost 70%.
The meet cute's a lie.
The meet cute's kind of a lie. Now, there's even some variation across things like gender, level of education, ethnic groups, but the variation tends to skew a little bit higher in a lot of these groups. The rate of friends first initiation was even higher among 20 somethings and within the LGBTQ plus communities. I find these two groups very interesting for a couple of reasons.
It's trending more common in younger people.
Yeah, there are even fewer meet cutes. There's even more friendship to relationships. 85% of people in those two key groups reported their relationship began as a friendship. Now, the reason I think that's interesting, and this is my particular theory for it, and of course, this study doesn't go into that. I think in the LGBTQ plus communities, certainly there are a lot of places where it is just not as comfortable or easy or safe to meet someone through an app or talk to a stranger or know the intentions of a stranger, right? Like that's not as easy to do. Both
Bonk
for safety
your head
reasons.
At a bookstore, not as easy. Not as easy.
Because LGBTQ people are all graceful gazelles and they don't bonk heads.
There's no bonking. That's the problem.
There's no bonking. And then in 20 somethings, I think in 20 somethings, I think it's because a lot of social media stuff and internet stuff is so manufactured, including if you look at like any 20 somethings social media, even if they're not like in any kind of industry or trying to be an influencer, their stuff is very manufactured. And I think it's just like they know that the world is trying to scam them. And so like it's easier to meet friends and friends of friends. And that feels more genuine, I think.
Interesting.
That's my theory.
If there's one thing that, you know, it's the 20 somethings.
There's one thing I know, it's the youth. I myself am sort of youth.
Sort of.
I'm sort of youth.
You're not at all.
In that I'm not at all a youth, but I'm drinking a gallon of water a day, Jeff. And good Lord, if my skin isn't glowing.
Oh, I can tell. My God, that is an enormous. Anyway, here's the problem with all of this, Anthony.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead.
And again, anecdotal, but pertinent. I feel.
Are you going to bring up the movie Serendipity with John Cusack and Kate Beckinsale?
I'm always going to bring that up.
All right.
Because what a gem of a film.
Or Sliding Doors.
Sliding Doors.
Gwyneth Paltrow and John Hannah.
You never know which door you should have gone through.
Yeah.
You never know.
Door slides
one
way.
The Weatherman. What about The Weatherman?
Oh, The Weatherman. It's a great movie.
No, in my own life, my own experience as a young high schooler who had dreams of romance,
Mm-hmm.
I felt like, in retrospect, I feel like I was duped into thinking that I should have made friends first. And it led to me basically not having any romantic relationships because I was constantly trying to become friends first. And then once I became friends, I was in the friend zone and was not considered a romantic option.
The friend zone is not real. It's a construct.
Well, it's be that construct. As it may, I did feel like I was constantly not, I was not presenting my my romantic aspirations to someone because mm-hmm. I wanted them to feel comfortable with me as a friend.
Yes.
And it led them to not think of me as someone who was interested in them romantically. And so now, they went, that's what a friend zone is to me, is like, oh, he's not showing any romantic interest. He's very clearly treating me like a friend. Because I right. thought, I'm not even exaggerating a little bit. I really bought into the John Hughes 80s idea of she was there the whole time. In this case, I was there the whole time.
Right.
I wanted to have that situation where, like, the girl that I was interested in was going to turn to me one day and went, oh my gosh, you have been the best and I love you. And meanwhile, she was dating all these other dudes and I was like, I'm being a friend and this sucks.
Okay.
And I know it's a cliche and I know you're even like, oh, friend zones, but whatever. Like, anecdotal, but I do think it, I mean, I did have that experience.
So to talk to that a little bit from the point of view of the study, among the university students, friends first initiators were friends for 1 to 2 years before beginning a romantic relationship. Researchers noted that the vast majority of these participants reported that they did not enter their friendships with romantic intentions or attraction.
There's a difference.
Yeah. These are people who are genuine friends who find a bond of respect, mutual admiration, being there for each other. What you were doing, and if I may be a little blunt.
Emily Blunt?
Is a little simpy cowardy.
Yeah, 100%. 100%, because I was a nerd and I didn't really have much social mm-hmm. skill.
Because people can tell. People can tell. Even that young, people can tell. It's like, oh, that's my friend Jeff. He's into me. I'm not into him.
Right.
Or they can't tell. And they're like, that's just my friend Jeff. But you right. went in with the romantic interest. I think if you already have romantic interest in somebody, the best thing you can do is just declare it and see what happens. So you're going to get shot down.
The study is saying that
a lot,
there's
but
this
you're gonna
very
be successful
large,
a lot.
Right. There's this very large group of people that both of them didn't look at the other as a romantic partner mm-hmm. until 1 to 2 years in, that both parties were happily in a friend situation until they weren't.
Yes. I've had a couple relationships like that where we were friends first and it was just kind of like, oh, this is a yeah. thing. Oh, okay. This is a thing.
Hmm.
And they lasted for a pretty long time.
You can honestly say in that situation that you didn't have romantic feelings about that person until
in
later?
In those situations, yes. Because I've never been the sort of person, even when I was a youthful nerd, I was a youthful nerd who was willing to put himself out there. So
not
I was
me.
Very
I was
much like, I was very much like, hey, do you want to go out? Do you want to hang out? Do you want to come to this party with me? Like,
oh,
hey,
no, nothing was more terrifying to me.
Oh, it's awful. It was the awfulest thing in the world. And you'd get shot down a lot. I got shot down so much, but you know, it's better. It's better than putting yourself into a liminal space of, gosh, I just wish I had done something. You know what I mean?
In seventh grade, I asked a girl to the dance and she laughed at me.
Ooh.
And that was the last time I ever did that.
Oh, buddy.
After that point,
that's a terrible
was
person.
Crushed. Yeah.
Why were you into this terrible person? You didn't know any better. You were a kid.
I didn't know. Yeah. I don't know. Hormones are firing. I don't know what I'm doing.
That's awful.
I just wanted a 5-to-2 ratio of touch. You know what I'm talking
That's
about?
That's all? Is that what you said to her?
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, okay. Just the same pressure that you would give to a whale or a rhinoceros is all
See,
I require.
This is the problem with you Cusackian Cusackian academics. The problem with the Cusackian and Husean theories vis-a-vis love and romance is they have aged the fucking worst. The fucking so worst. Yo, so have you ever watched, have you gone back and watched Say Anything? Dude's a stalker.
No. Yeah, he's a
creepy
stalker. But it works out well for him. That's the lie. That's the lie of those movies, is that Ooh. Works out well for him.
He is a creep.
Yeah.
It is painful to watch. A lot of these like old 80s and 90s, they're just, oh, you watch them, you're just like, oh, don't do it.
If today that would be like, in your eyes, the light, the heat. Whoa, why are the sirens? Where are the sirens coming from?
Oh, dude,
officer, please.
I don't even knock on a friend's door if they don't know I'm coming over. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're gonna stand outside of somebody's apartment with a fucking boombox. People don't even know what a boombox is, old man. You can't stand outside of somebody's, especially not in a trench coat.
Oof.
He was in a trench coat.
Bad look. He was.
He's a weird dude. Those movies are weird. Anyway.
Yeah. That's what I learned from. Those are the ones I learned
but
from.
But that's the thing. That's what a lot of people learn from. And there's this thing that we all had to kind of like, there's this thing that like in the last decade that a lot of dudes in particular have had to go through is the understanding of the, like, you know, the nice guy. I'm the tortured, lonely nice guy, and eventually people will notice me. Like that's fucking toxic, because that turns you from a bullied person into a bully as you get older.
Right.
And it's really weird, and it makes you really weird. And people are learning that, and it's cool, and we're growing as a society. And we just had this study that says, yo, maybe it has been right in front of you all along, but you can't be hunting for it, because that's not, it's right in front of me all along. That's, I knew it was in front of me. Half of the students reported that starting as friends was their preferred way of developing a romantic relationship. Over
half,
anything.
Those half, the female half.
Right? But no, what this means is what, like...
Well, I was just saying, you know what? I would love to see the next step of this study is to then plot out which mode of relationship lasts longer, tends to have, you know, happier results, happier couples. Like does starting as friends result in a stronger relationship? I think that would be a fascinating angle to pursue.
Yeah, I do think it's interesting. Like I can immediately see the benefits of it, right? Like this is somebody you already kind of know in and out, and somebody who's already kind of like, there aren't as many surprises.
Yeah, you don't get that.
Yeah, you vetted them. And not only have you vetted them, they didn't put up whatever front or whatever image that people put up within the first, you know, couple months of dating, you know, before people start relaxing and doing whatever. The authors of this study say that they hope that this research will push people to revisit their preconceived notions about love and friendship. We're often taught that romance and relationships are dissimilar types of romance and friendship are dissimilar types of relationships that form in different ways and meet distinct needs. But those lines can be blurry, and I think it forces us to rethink our assumptions about what makes a good friendship and how that makes a good romantic relationship. And I think that's something as somebody who's been in a long-term relationship and somebody who's married now and has kids, you can probably relate to that. I mean, my ex and I were together for 9 years, and like, yeah, there comes a time where like the most important part of the relationship is sort of that mutual respect and friendship. And like, you've grown 100%. Together for so long, you know?
Yeah. And so yeah, those people that say I married my best friend, you know, you hear that a lot, you know,
you hear that a lot on the way out of divorce court.
Yeah.
But that's
my best friend. I divorced my best friend.
I divorced my best friend. Shout out to my best friend who I divorced.
I'm sorry,
it's great. She's literally, we're literally friends, and that's wonderful.
Great. Yeah.
But yeah, I think this is cool. I think this is a great, I think this is a great thing to think about. And I think the follow-up study that I would like to see is how, like you're saying, media and society molds our preconceived notions of these things versus the way they actually are.
Oh, right? I think that is 100%. It's very damaging because we have these weird fairy tale ideas of how it's all supposed to go. And it almost never goes that way. You know, these notions of what love is and what romance is are formed by completely unreasonable narratives, you know? And I 100% think that I had to mature enough to realize that the world didn't operate the way it operates in movies. I was a kid. I was a kid of media, and I was a kid who lived in my imagination and in fantasy stories and wanted, I mean, I still like that in a lot of ways. I've grown up a lot and learned a lot and gained confidence and secure in who I am. And all of those things have helped. But my wife still says things like, that's a fantasy. The world doesn't work like that, you know? And it's true. It's true. I definitely interpret the world in unreasonable ways because of my love of romance with a capital R, not even just like romantic stuff, but like,
no, but that's one of the things that's wonderful about you is how idealistic you are. And I'm sure it's one of the things that she loves about you, but it's also great that you found somebody who can let you know, hey, just dial it back like two notches.
Oh yeah. I mean,
just two notches.
Erin is definitely the yang to my yin. You know, she's so grounded and realistic and cautionary. I'm like, let's leap out of the plane. It'll all work out. And she's like, no, you know, we should probably plan some stuff.
No, it's well, first of all, what plane? You're shaking me awake. It's 3 a.m. and you're telling me you want to jump out of a plane.
Exactly.
Where is this plane?
Yeah. We're not. Do you have your ID to even get on the plane? No, I'm sorry, honey. I don't have it.
You don't know where it is, do you? I know where it is.
Exactly. That is our relationship.
I know where it is. 100%. And I'm not telling you until you tell me what plane this is. So, yeah. I love this. I love this story. Thank you.
I love this story. And you know what? This story and I just started out as friends. And now I love this story.
Hey. Hey, thanks for listening. Thanks for coming by and joining us again this week. A special thank you to Nacho Supreme, who, of course, submitted one of our stories on the Discord. If you want to check out the Discord, remember, you can do so at patreon.com/wehaveconcerns. It's just $1 a month to get access to the Discord community. And up from there, you get tons more bonus extras. And it is the only way that we support and monetize the show. So we really appreciate everybody that's been doing it.
Yeah. Thanks so much for supporting the show, and we'll see you next time.